Have you ever been in a situation where there's a situation that is just pressing hard against you, and it's very important to you, and it's causing a lot of stress, or maybe it's causing a lot of grief, a lot of anguish, sleepless nights? And you think about that for a period of time, you really get to a point where you say, I need help with this. And you search out someone to share in confidence with you this event that's taking place in your life. And you share that with them. Now, I'm going to say that probably all of us have been in that situation at some point in time in our life. That we bare our soul to someone else over some situation or condition that's taking place in our life that is just more than we can really handle. And usually in that situation, we're very careful about who it is that we confide in, that we reveal in confidence to that individual the situations that are taking place in our life, because they have some qualities that we recognize. And again, I say that that's probably happened to several of us, that we've done that before. But have you ever done that and confide in someone and find out that they were not the person you thought they were? And they broke that confidence. I want to speak with you this evening about receiving that which is in confidence and also recognizing that which is in confidence. When we look to Scripture concerning this, that which is in confidence is really a trust that is placed in the individual in which we have chosen to bear our soul and the problems and the situations in our life. It's really a trust that we create with them. When you go back, of course, there's old sayings, loose lips sink ships. I'm always impressed also with this one on D-Day. D-Day was held in the highest secrecy, because any tip of the hand, any indication, any leak whatsoever, that the day of D-Day, the attack on Normandy Beach in the strongholds of the German forces at that time during World War II, any leak of that information at all spelled absolute disaster, not only for our troops, but for the Allied troops that engaged in that battle. And I think about this, and this is the reason why. General Dwight David Eisenhower was the commanding leader of all the forces at that time. And he understood the danger that was involved in this mission. He understood not only the danger, but he also understood that this was really the make it or break it point of the war. If there was a victory in Normandy, not too far in the future would be then the fall of the Third Reich of Germany. If there was failure, there was a good chance that the Allied forces would lose to Germany. It was really that serious. But also realizing that those troops that were going to be sent in not only shows in Dwight David Eisenhower the great mind as far as war was concerned in making that battle plan, but also the great heart that man had, because he recognized that many of those young men that he was about to send would not come back alive. He went out and did that which was unheard of the day before D-Day, and he called the troops around him. He said, "We go tomorrow." He told them when. The usual way would have been mustering the morning of, putting the forces in place, and the attack take place at that time, but he didn't do that. And he made the statement. He says, "Many of you will not come back. You have the right to know before you go that you're going." And it's touching to me that what he did, he placed in those thousands of troops a confidence, I believe, that was unheralded as far as war is concerned. And to the man, there was not a breaking of that confidence. It was quite a scene. As a matter of fact, there's a picture of that if you want to see that, and it's on the internet if you want to Google the day before D-Day. That told in confidence to us is a trust placed upon us. And because of that, we really are to hold it sacred. Because it has to do with promise, it has to do with promise keeping, it has to do with trustworthiness, it has to do really with being a Christian, whenever confidence is placed in us. Consider with me some teachings concerning a trust. First of all, when we look in the 55th Psalm, verse 11 through 14, and the 41st Psalm, verse 9, we're to be a true friend. David said this in his life. David, being a man of war, a man of the sword, inherently had enemies. And you understand that. And he says, people who hurt and cheat others are everywhere. He says, if it were an enemy insulting me, I could bear it. If it were my enemies attacking me, I could hide. But it is you, the one so close to me, my companion, my good friend, who does this. We used to share our secrets with one another as we walked through the crowds together in God's temple. Doesn't matter who the person is, but we understand from this. The confidence, the trust that David had placed in this individual that he's speaking of. And he calls him, and I like the King James, my own familiar friend. My own familiar friend. You are the one that has turned against me. You are the one that broke the trust. You're the one that's broke the promise. They were not a true friend. And then in the 41st Psalm in verse 9, David says, my best friend, the one I trusted, the one who I ate with me, even he has turned against me. And David isn't the only one. We see where others had turned against Paul during his lifetime, and he reported of that. Demas is one. Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, Paul said. There was a element of trust, an element of confidence that was there, but it was broken by the friend. They weren't a true friend. What this teaches, even though it's in the negative sense, it teaches that which is in the positive, to be a true friend. It's not break the confidence, the promise that is there, but rather to hold true to it. You see, we're to rejoice in the prosperity of others and not in their hurt. When we look in the 38th Psalm, verse 15 and 16, it says, Lord, you must defend me. Lord, my God, you must speak to me. That's why I prayed, don't let my enemy smile at my pain. Full of pride, they will laugh if I stumble and fall. The rejoicing that others had around David that he is conveying to us would be in his demise and not in his prosperity. I know of a situation where there was a very generous benefactor in a congregation. Now I'm talking monetary-wise. And this very generous benefactor came to the elders and asked to remain anonymous. And the elders agreed to that. And there was an element within this congregation that just could not stand. They just were continually trying to find out who it was. They really were trying to stir up trouble over the situation, is what it was. Instead of looking at the prosperity of that congregation where this benefactor was, they weren't satisfied with that. They were only satisfied in putting their nose where it didn't belong and in causing trouble over it. When we look here at what David has to say, of course, ultimately we understand that the only one we can ultimately trust in is God. He's the only one. But yet we're to be the type of people following God so that we can have that confidence and trust placed upon us because we look for the betterment of others. There are those that are so petty that if something good happens to an individual, they're not happy about that. But if something bad happens to it, well, then it's all the talk. It's all the talk. Matter of fact, there are those that get upset if something good happens to someone. We should be happy. We are to rejoice when people rejoice. We are to be saddened with those that are saddened. And that's what Paul speaks of course, in Romans 12th chapter from about verse 10 and following. We are not to betray a confidence. 25th Proverb, Proverbs 25, verse 9. If you want to tell friends, your friends, about your own problems, tell them. That's your business. But don't discuss what someone told you in confidence or in private. Don't do it. And you know, there are those that just, they can't keep their tongue, it seems like. And we'll talk about that more in just a moment. But if there's ever any news that comes to them, the first thing they want to do is to hold themselves high and say, I have news that nobody else has, so therefore that makes me better. And that's not the case. That's not the case. And it really goes against what Solomon is speaking of in wisdom here in the 25th Proverbs 25, rather. Don't be a truce breaker. When we look in 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 and 3, Paul says, remember this, there are some terrible times coming in the last days. They will have no love for others and will refuse to forgive anyone. They will talk about others to hurt them. That's being a truce breaker. And will have no self-control. They will be cruel and hate what is good. And there are so many that are like that. Matter of fact, Isaiah speaks to this. In Isaiah the 5th chapter, verse 20 and 21. Woe to them that call evil good and good evil, to put light for darkness, darkness for light, that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own understanding. We're not to be truce breakers. We're not to talk about others to their hurt, but rather for their good. We're not to defraud a brother. 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 6 through 9, never wrong any one of your fellow believers or cheat them in any way. The Lord will punish those who do that. We've already told you and warned you about it. God chose us to be holy. He does not want us to live in sin. Evidently, when you look back in that writing, and we're in that discussion, that class of the 1 Thessalonians on Sunday morning, there was a problem here with those that were defrauding one another. And there was some cheating going on. And in that cheating, it's really what takes place in a breaking of a trust or a confidence. You cheat the brother out of that confidence, that trust that he has placed in you, if you tell it. And so he's saying, don't do that. We're to live in peace and mind our own business. 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 11 and 12, Paul says, do all you can to live a peaceable life. Mind your own business, earn your own living, as we told you before. If you do those things, then those who are not believers will respect the way you live. And you will not have to depend on others for what you need. What a shame, especially whenever there are Christians that go out into the world and talk about their brethren to those that are not Christians. How shameful that is. What a belittling that is. What is not holding a truce, a confidence, not only with the brother, but also in God to do that. And it also conveys the thought to those that aren't believers, those that hear this. Well, if he or she is saying that about those that are part of his spiritual family, what in the world would he say about me when he leaves from talking with me? And that's a proper thought. And I will tell you that if you're involved with somebody like that, whatever you're hearing about somebody else is exactly what they're going to be receiving about you wherever they get to somebody else. And so it's going to take place. Paul says, don't be that. Live in peace. Mind your own business. You see, this is being a true Christian. That's what a true Christian is, especially in connection with that which is given in confidence. How to handle a confidence. First of all, tell the one that asked you to keep a confidence not to tell you if you can't keep the trust. That takes a lot of self-control. Because usually people that can't keep a trust, they want to know, because the first thing you want to do is go out and tell others. And part of the growth process of being a Christian has to get to the point of saying, stop, don't tell me, because I'm telling you, I can't keep my mouth shut. Don't tell me. And that's really where we have to get to until we're able to keep a confidence. It's better to not know the situation or the event that is taking place in one's life than it is to betray the trust. Look at what Solomon says in the 21st chapter of Proverbs, verse 23. People who are careful about what they say will save themselves from trouble. And those that break confidence know for sure that not only does trouble come for those that gave them the confidence, but it comes for them that broke the confidence. There's trouble involved in that. And trouble to the point that a reputation is ruined. And more than likely, at least for many years, as long as that individual is alive, there'll be a remembrance of that. And no one else will want to place a trust or a confidence in that person that breaks that trust. So it's better not to know. Just don't tell me. If you cannot keep a secret, do not tell me. Don't do it. Have that attitude. If the situation is one that may be untenable, and what I mean by that, if this situation that you are being told of could cause harm to that person, to yourself, or to someone else, whether it be physically or spiritually, either way, up front, tell the individual, before you tell me all the details of this, I'm letting you know I may not be able to not say something about this. And especially from the standpoint of spiritual matters. We have overseers in this congregation. We have shepherds, elders. And they're not to be... They're not to be oblivious to the situations that take place within the congregation. They are supposed to know. And there may be some things that a person wants to tell you that really is spiritually detrimental not only to them, but also, if unchecked, it could influence others within the congregation to lead them away from the Lord. That can't be kept. That needs to be addressed. And so we need to be very honest with people that give us a confidence based upon the type of confidence that it is. At times we may have to tell them, look, I can see where this is headed. Before you continue, I'm letting you know if it's headed where I think it is, I'm going to have to say something to the elders. I'm going to have to let them know. The 13th chapter in verse 3 of Proverbs, Solomon says, people who are careful about what they say will save their lives. But those who speak without thinking will be destroyed. I had a brother that every time that I would come over and see him or take him somewhere, he would want to give me money and I would refuse. And then he got me one day. He says, hey, would you do something for me? I said, I sure will. And then he handed me a $20 bill. He says, now you said you would take it. And so he caught me on that. Okay. But the point of it is that we really need to be careful about what we say. And so if someone asks us, will you hold this in confidence? We need to really see what the matter is about before we can say that we will. Because it may be to their detriment, to our detriment, or to the detriment of others. And we can't hold a silence in that situation. Here is what takes place so often whenever something like this takes place. There's something that is known within a congregation. You ever hear the old adage, where there's smoke, certainly there's fire? People see a little bit of smoke, well then they're looking for they want to know where the fire is. Okay? If others want to guess about the situation, you are the one that has the confidence placed in you. Put the games to a stop. I've seen this before, and it's just like children. There's the eye rolling. Well, is it about so-and-so? Well, and so they play the little game and give the little indications, whether it be that which is verbal or that which is physical, words or gestures to indicate whether they're right or whether they're wrong. You know how we used to do with kids? Well, you're getting warmer. It's kind of along that same point. Just tell them you are not at liberty to say if you've been given the confidence. You have been given that confidence, and therefore you must keep it. When we look in Proverbs 12, verse 23, smart people don't tell everything they know, but fools tell everything and show they are fools. There's a saying that is an earthly adage, but it really comes from this. You know, a fool can't keep his mouth shut, and so therefore he is known as a fool. It's something along that line, right? And actually, I have to be honest, I forgot exactly what I was going to say. But you know, I think you know what I'm talking about. They remove all doubt by opening their mouth. And I'll get help with that later, I'm sure. but it's along the same lines. We're not to tell everything that we know. If you receive that told in confidence, don't betray the trust, keep your word. And Solomon says in the 11th chapter, verse 13 of Proverbs, people who tell secrets about others cannot be trusted. Those who can be trusted, they keep quiet. They keep quiet. So when we think about this, we need to make sure how we handle a confidence. Either being a true friend all the way to the end, understanding the situation, whether or not it can cause harm to themselves, to others, to the person that's telling you, or even to the point of, look, I can't keep my mouth shut, don't tell me, don't do it. Either way, that's the proper way to go. Then I want to talk to those that want to make the guess, to want to be in the hunt about what the situation is, about the curiosity of something that is going on. Consider first that if the person wanted you to know their matters, they would have told you. And that's always a good starting point, isn't it? If somebody wanted you to know, they would have called you to the side. You would have been the one that received the confidence. Since it is not you, don't be involved in it. Some want to place a confidence. There are some that we do want to place confidence with. There are others that we don't. 18th chapter of Proverbs, verse 24. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother, the one that can hold that confidence in the context that we're speaking of. Have a meek and quiet spirit. And where that takes place, when things are going on, we're not out trying to be, as we're going to look here in just a moment, busybodies and so forth in other people's matters, but we have a quiet spirit. 1 Peter 3 and verse 4 is talking about women, but the application of a meek and quiet spirit is really to all. And so Peter says there in 1 Peter 3 and verse 4, no, your beauty should come from inside you. The beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, the beauty that will never disappear, it is worth very much unto God. That meek and quiet spirit is that we're not trying to puff ourselves up or to look like the know-it-all in any way. It shouldn't be our place to do that. Because we weren't told anything, it's not our business. And that's the point. Consider that trying to go through the back door to find things out is entering into gossip. Well, I can't find it out from the one that the confidence was told, so I'm going to go to another source. I'm going to keep tracking this down until I know the source of the whole situation. I'm going to know. But when we look at that, it's being a busybody. It is being a tattler, a busybody, a meddler. Notice what is stated. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 11. We hear that some people in your group refuse to work. They are doing nothing except being busy in the lives of others. And I'll tell you, there are those that it seems as though they make that their lifetime work. Instead of taking care of their own house, they're in the big middle, knee deep, in somebody else's matters. And what matter is it to them? Really none. None whatsoever. Paul says, 1 Timothy 5, verse 13, they also begin to gossip, and I know this is about the younger widows, but still there is an application from principle here. They begin to gossip and try to run other people's lives. They say things they should not. Yeah, isn't it so easy for us to look at others and say, I know how to fix your problems. I can see the problem, and I'm ready with the advice. But man, we stand in front of that mirror and we don't see a flaw, do we? Nothing. Well, the Christian stands in the mirror and really looks at what's there. He examines that. The 41st Psalm, verse 6 and 7. If they come to see me, they don't say what they are really thinking. And you know, that is how usually meddlers try to find out matters. They don't really say what they're thinking. They ask leading questions to try to get somebody to say something that, even if they don't get the truth, they get something they can start a tattle about. A lie. Says, they come together a little gossip, and then they go to spread their rumors. Those who hate me whisper about me, they think the worst about me. And that's really what being a busybody is. Because you see, people don't dig whenever there's good news so much, do they? They dig wherever it is bad news. Isn't that a shame? And that's what David was talking about there in the 41st Psalm. Consider that placing a person that has a trust given them in an awkward position. is not brotherly. You know that a person has been given the trust, the confidence by someone else, and to continually third degree them, continually try to find out the matter of the other person, is not being brotherly whatsoever. And Paul says this in Romans 12, verse 9 and 10, your love must be real. Hate what is evil, do only what is good. Love each other in a way that makes you feel close, like brothers and sisters, and give each other more honor than you give yourself. Give the honor to the other that has been told the confidence that it is their business, along with the person that gave the confidence, and it's not my business. I will back out. I will not be involved in that. And that's the attitude that we need to have. Here's the application. Let us all show in our lives what it is to be our brother's keeper. And that's really what Jesus' statement in Mark the 12th chapter, verse 31 is, love thy neighbors as thyself. It's really being the brother's keeper. Allow that we will not know all matters, and know this for sure, we will not know all matters. And if we think about it right, we don't want to know all matters. I have trouble enough keeping up with myself. Beverly has trouble enough keeping up with me. We don't need matters of others. And I don't need matters of others. Proverbs, the 17th chapter and verse 9. And then, let brotherly love abide. Well, I don't know how that happened. I apologize for that. But be a friend to yourself. That's what should be there. I'm sorry. It should be Proverbs 19 and verse 8. Be a friend to yourself. Do all you can to be wise. Try hard to understand, and you will be rewarded. We can actually be friends to ourselves, help ourselves out, if we try not to know the matters of others. And that's what Solomon is saying. And then, let brotherly love abide. 1 Peter 1, verse 22. You have made yourselves pure by obeying the truth. Now you can have true love for your brothers and sisters. So love each other deeply with all your heart. Honor and respect of one another. As Christians, we don't have any other path other than that, any other obligation other than that, than those confidence that are placed within us to keep it as sacred. And that we must do. Let's be sure that we're involved more about keeping ourselves in right standing with God and right standing with our brethren than trying to find matters out about others.